Yes. Taking in turns.
It's going to be overloaded.
All right. So, yeah, all the coming one year then. All coming in one year is what you're saying.
We'll take it in shifts.
Take it in shifts to come in his one year.
Isn't there a medical condition called like sticky ear or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So I'm just trying to adjust my chair. It's sticky with the gaffer tape. We are recording now, by the way.
Oh, we are? Okay, yes. So Arrested Development.
Yes.
Oh, no, Severance Season 2.
Yeah, I've been wary of watching Season 2 in case they fucked it up, but from your reaction, it's good, right?
It's good so far. Yeah. I've seen the first episode.
I just noticed your name's changed there, Drew.
My name's changed?
Yeah.
Oh, where are you?
Where are you?
It's always been that. It's just not shown up before.
I disagree. I disagree as well.
It's said before.
It's always shown my Google, because you have to log in with Google for this, right? And it's always shown what like Google, my Google version of the name. But that's what I always put in the box when I join this call.
Is he lying? You decide, viewer.
Yeah, you decide, viewer.
Actually, we got a lot of feedback from yesterday, from the last episode, but it was all about the politics stuff.
I saw that.
Not your anal sex talk, then.
Hang on a minute. Pennyweather said something. And that was also about politics.
As long as it's not about the expanse, heaven forbid, you know.
All politics. So, but you know,
can I ask a controversial? There's a controversy that has arisen. Mm-hmm. Danny's always frustrated. Friend of the show, Danny has always frustrated me by if I ask her an A or B.
Oh no, you're gonna continue that.
If I ask an A or B question, I'll go, is it red or is it blue? She'll go yes.
Yeah.
Right.
People do and that she to me. Says, that drives me mad.
If you respond yes to an A or B question, it means the first option. Bullshit. And then yesterday, Ghosty did the same thing to me. He claims that he said yes before I got to the second option. So, he agreed with Danny that if it's A or B and you say yes, that means the first one.
It depends how you phrase it. If you're saying, "Do you want me to go to the shops or?" Shall I stay home? Right. You're saying the answer is if you say yes,
then it's the positive. I still don't agree. I see the logic of that. I don't agree
that
with it.
That doesn't mean that should, no.
Ultimately, people should just give the fucking answer is the bottom, bottom line.
The fucking question that was asked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It depends. Like,
also, in reverse as well with Danny. If I ask her A or B, she won't say yes. So, no, I can't remember what I was going to say.
With the inverse of it, but I don't know what the inverse of that is.
Yeah, I had
the inverse of it is her asking an A B question and you giving the answer.
Yes.
Yeah. No, the inverse is it like saying no doesn't mean the second though, right?
I think it would. I think we. I don't know what she would argue for that, but I think she might argue that. Yeah.
Oh, I think she would.
Is it red or is it blue? No, that means neither.
Why you need an answer? Yes or no? You need a red or blue or no? It's not either of those. That's why you need an actual conversation and an answer.
Or you could use the poll function.
Also, when I ask her a yes or no question, I always get anything but yes or no at the end. But that's the other one. A or B, she gives you yes or no. Yes or no, she'll give anything but yes or no.
I have noticed her do that. She's not the only one, though, to be fair. It's a problem amongst many people.
If you ask her... A yes no question, she'll give you nothing but context. But if she's trying to sell you something where context matters, no context, just the details. I swear.
I don't believe that's true, Danny. I think they're just having a go at you.
She will not watch this in a million years. we're like an old fucking married couple, but thankfully separated by continents.
Be careful. You never know.
Yeah, tectonic shifts and stuff. or proto-molecule based technology.
Shifts. What I didn't mean the world was going to reshape itself. I meant there's things like airplanes and boats. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I mean, you know, those continents are charging at each other.
Yeah. What I was going to say is plane or boat, and the answer is tectonic shift.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I was trying to show my googly eyes, but it's not really. I don't know if you can see the. Can you even see the camera?
No, it's on the phone.
It's because of the background thing, isn't it?
I mean, you can turn the background off if you want to demonstrate googly eyes. It depends.
See, you can't see them. Those blue lines are the camera, but you can't see the googly eyes. I'd need a proper mirror or something, but that might involve getting up. Actually, I'll try turning the background off. Hang on. Select background. None. Right, let's see. No, you still can't see the googly eyes because there's not enough. Oh, hang on. Oh, God, even with the reflection, you can't see it. Oh, that's a shame. They're there.
I don't know.
You can't
that.
See my fingers now either, so never mind. Bollocks.
Well. I'm pretty sure there's a reason they call you fingerless Hamish, but
yeah, that's not what the ladies say. Right, there we go. I've got my space chair back. Shows a ting. Right, Christopher. First things first. Christopher, do you still not realise why I thought you might be annoyed at this episode?
I don't. I just watched it.
What does it start
the second
with?
Time.
What does it start with?
Oh, flashback.
It's a flashback, yeah.
Oh, action. Oh, okay. Yes. All right. And
I'm waiting
also
for him to somehow justify this one the way he unjustified the other one.
Okay. This wasn't as bad as the other one.
See, I knew it.
Because it was kind of short and whatever. But I don't.
That's what she said.
I would have preferred the sort of either the deliberate ambiguity or seeing it at the time or something like
but
that.
But there was no context for those people, though.
I
at the time.
I like that we didn't know what she did.
Yeah.
And now we do. I think that was the right way
for
to...
me. Yeah, it worked for me.
Yeah.
But she could have
also,
explained it.
You know, in the first episode, there's a ship, a belter ship escapes the blockade.
Mm-hmm.
That was their ship, because the woman who's like the boss of the camp and that family and a couple of others who are recognisable are on that ship.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been other ways of doing it. This is not particularly egregious, but it just feels like... it feels like it's trying to very much manipulate how we feel about this woman, right?
Because manipulate? How do you mean?
Sort of, because it's like they're deflooring the character, right? Like,
Sorry. You see what you mean, and I'll.
Yeah. So the Belters don't want the Earthers coming down for obvious reasons. So they're going to blow up the landing pad.
Mm-hmm.
When they realize that the Belters are coming down, when the Earthers are coming down early, the woman is like, okay, let's not do it. I don't want to kill these people. And then she basically gets forced into it. Basically, effectively explaining that she's not really a guilty party in this terrorist attack.
She's not guilty of the attack on the ship directly. She didn't you know, she got knocked out and then just panicked and tried to grab the detonator to blow it up as quick as possible to put them off. But then she didn't realise obviously that some time had passed.
I mean, based on what we saw in the flashback, she did absolutely nothing wrong whatsoever. Like she was trying to, like, she was going to blow up the pad to sabotage it. Prior to that, but when the other people wanted to blow it up and hurt the other ship coming down, she blew it up as early as possible, which minimized
the chance of them blowing up the whole ship, because that was what they wanted to do. They were going to wait until it landed and blow the whole thing up.
Yeah,
he's literally blameless in terms. Like, she did nothing wrong. She's saving lives. Like,
I. And I don't necessarily know if I like.
Well, she still feels guilty anyway, for obvious reasons, you know. Sorry, yeah, I'm playing them a bitch.
She could have just said, like, oh, we didn't plan to kill anyone, and that would have sort of basically explained it. Like, I feel like it was a little bit like, I don't even care if she...
A bit of context, I think.
You know. A little bit. I mean, I don't necessarily... I think it would have been more interesting for a character if she was a little bit more of a guilty party, to be honest.
I agree with that, I think. Yeah. Yeah, because what she's done, as we've seen it, I mean, I understand why she feels guilty, because she's essentially done the trolley problem.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
She did, if she hadn't acted, more people would have died. So she did something to directly harm some people, but it overall less harm. So you can understand why she feels guilty about that, but it does seem like an overreaction when she wasn't really to blame.
Mm. And also, I don't necessarily I think that there is somewhat legitimate, I don't want to say legitimate reasons for the attack, but like there were reasons for the attack.
Well, like, it was certainly legitimate to blow up the landing pad so they just couldn't land and they had to fuck off. That was a smart idea.
Yeah, that was a good idea. Plan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, they're defending their home. Like,
yeah, yeah.
At this point, they're refugees from Ganymede.
And what they feared actually did happen anyway. So it was, exactly. You know, that's even more of a justification in hindsight, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like it was unnecessarily sort of removing her flaws a little bit, I guess.
What, and then they had to sort of put them back in? Because, I mean, when she speaks to her husband and stuff, you know.
Yeah. Sort of, I guess, yeah. I mean, it was
He still sees that she got involved with these people which she shouldn't have been involved with, you know. Yeah. But then if and she also, hadn't like, been, then not... it would have killed them all. All of them would be dead and then they'd be sending warships. So, it's all...
That's not an invalid criticism, right? Like, you know, you fall in with violent people, you know, expect violence a little bit. Like, yeah. I don't want to be victim blaming or nothing, but it's like, so I'm not necessarily, but like, you know.
I know what you mean, but like, she definitely, yeah, I don't know. One of my notes is Jacob is a piece of shit.
Which one's Jacob?
That's the husband. Her husband. The way he reacted.
He does like, go a bit, but then his daughter's also missing and everything. You know, there's a lot going on there for him to
react
to.
That's not her fault. It has nothing to do with what she
did. Yeah, but he doesn't know that, really.
And also,
And
also, from his point of view, if she's off cavorting with the terrorists...
Well, if she was off cavorting with the terrorists and he was the one who was more at the home at the time, then it's more fucking his responsibility where the daughter is.
I mean, their parents is both their responsibility, right?
But in that situation, you know, if
no, so but I'm, the daughter's I'm, the, daughter, I'm married, the daughter's disappeared I'm since because she was when the whole thing kicked off with the terrorist cell being murdered, she was still in the medical bay with Naomi.
Mm.
So they were both still in the camp.
Yeah, there's actually nothing to do.
But we also... did we find... No, we've not found this out yet. Sorry, I was going to be a bit teleological there when we find out where the daughter is.
Yeah, because I don't... I'm reserving sort of judgment on the daughter because, like, how old is she? Like, 18? University?
No, I think she's meant to be 15 or something.
Yeah, 15 or something like
that. Hard to tell because people always play younger, don't they, on these shows. I think she is about 18 or something at the time.
All right, let's
say student
age. The actual
actress, 17 or 18.
Yeah. But, like, student age... Then it's like she's perfectly capable. Well, I don't want to say perfectly capable of running away from home, but it's like she might not have been kidnapped. She might have actually have
done something of her own accord.
Whatever that might be. So she might be. So I obviously you got to poker face that one for me because I'm presuming we find out what happened to her. But yeah, like, I don't know if it's like, we have no evidence as the viewer that she's been kidnapped. Like, Murtry doesn't have her in a possession that we can see.
There's nothing to say.
No one seems to have kidnapped. There's no evidence of a kidnapping. And she's a teenager with dreams of the big city or whatever, you know?
I mean, shit kicked off in the camp. If she's smart, she's just laying low.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's no reason the shit that kicked off in the camp is none of it's mysterious. Like, it's all known what happened. This side was shooting at that side. There's no reason for them to take her daughter. None of them are saying they've taken her daughter. There's no reason to think. I mean, of course, as a parent, you're worried, but there's no reason to think she's in particular danger. In fact, she's probably better off where, like, if she's gone and hidden, but she's her probably mom, better off.
It's her mum that should be worried rather than her dad.
Well, I think her mum seems
because her mum got a threat against both of them.
Yeah, but I think they understand that threat didn't really make sense. Naomi was right about that, but I think her mum is more like the daughter. Like, she's more like she trusts the daughter. Essentially, the father is being too overbearing. I think she can take care of herself. Basically,
I don't know if she's being too overbearing. I mean, things are getting pretty heated, and You'd want to know where your daughter were
but blaming moms, the spouse seems
nonsensical.
That's real life. It seems like real life to me, but we're not going to go into that. Right, well, that leads us nicely then into Naomi's. Well,
before we move on, because we did touch on it, because you're talking about protecting their home, and there's a bit in this episode later, but there's a bit in this episode where Murtry sort of says, like, we've got a warrant from like an actual government, like they're still
like calls the OPA, them squatters that, like, and murderers.
Which is like quite ironic. Either the OPA do speak for the belt or they don't. Like the inners need to make their fucking mind up about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that what I'm saying is naive, of course, but I'm saying that's
what's happening anyway, sort of thing.
That's
the story, as it were.
But also, like, I mean, the sort of the chief lady did say, like you can't claim all of the planets.
You can't claim every planet in the sky.
Yeah, like, it's like,
although she's somewhat annoying because she's, I think this is a trope. She's like leader of like an indigenous population or whatever. I mean, in fiction, I'm not criticizing leaders of indigenous populations, but the way they're portrayed, it's not that. I know they're not indigenous to here, but like that kind of feel to it. And she, like, Holden's literally saying, essentially, this place is going to get nuked and you're going to die. Like, I mean, in terms of threat,
later on.
And she's like, no, this is our home. We're going to stay. Like, come on, like, be fucking
I'm totally on the woman's side on this one.
I'd rather die for the place, for my place, than
you're not
ship to believe anything that Holden says after he seems to be working with Murtry.
I don't think he seems to be working with
Murtry. From their point of view.
But she didn't seem to not believe him. She seemed to believe him, but go, no, I'd rather die here than go into orbit for a couple of days and see what happens. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
But as far as she's concerned, they're being taken away. Like, they're being jailed, kidnapped,
removed. Is that worse than guaranteed death?
Ah, there is no guaranteed death.
If she believes Holden, and she doesn't seem to disbelieve
him. Now, Holden can't guarantee the death either.
He can't guarantee much. And then he tells them why he thinks these things are, you know. And we know it's true because we've seen Miller on the screen. But
say a nuclear war breaks out tomorrow, and we found out, like, credibly and reliably, like, your house is going to get nuked the day after. You should move out. And you're like, nope, this is my home. I'd rather stay here and face the consequences than move. Like, I mean,
normal. First of all, but you've got to add a few extra layers onto that, right? Because first of all, they're refugees from Ganymede, right? No one wanted to take them in then. They don't have anywhere else to go. Like, that's
I do get all that, but when it's literally life or death,
But also,
what's the point of taking a stand in that situation?
Yeah, but also, Holden and
some things are worth dying for.
Yeah, no, against for a cause, sure, but just against entropy. Yeah. entropy a fucking lesson.
But also, like, Murtry and Holden to them are just Earthers trying to get them off world.
I can see that argument, but that doesn't seem to be how she sees it. She does seem to believe Holden.
Because also, another part is, it's like, how bad can this be? Is this machine going to split the planet in two, or is it just going to make some lightning storms or whatever? It's like, we'll stay here and make the best of it. That seems, you know.
I
think you're being teleological, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
I mean, there is teleology, but like, no, I'm not basing on that. I'm literally just basing on what Holden is saying right now. I mean, and what we know of him, to be fair. We
know they're all going to die.
No, no. What it means is what we know as viewers. We know Holden's.
Teleology.
Yeah. Well, not a teleological thing. Just we know Holden's an honest person.
I gotta be honest, right? I even with my teleologicalness of watching it so far, I still would vote to stay.
That's insane.
No, I really think you're thinking ahead too much. I really do. Yes.
No, I'm just thinking about it. It's a trope, and I hate that trope. Like, yeah, threat is coming. It's going to at least be very dangerous and could possibly kill you all. Just out of some principle could that doesn't possibly make any sense.
It's not a principle.
I don't like people telling me what to do. It's like the old, forest fires ravaging, for something that's like forest fires ravaging through a place, or floods and stuff, and like, but they evacuate. Not, and so some old person who's like, no, it's this has been my home. For 60 years.
But the reason it's not like that is because this alien technology is an unknown quantity. It's not like a known disaster, like a hurricane
They know about Eros. They literally were kicked off Ganymede. I mean, that's not directly proto molecule, but like,
they have more right to be scared of people than aliens at this point.
Yeah.
not with Eros taken into account, I don't think. And also, they can see these big creepy fucking structures. They can see one,
and it's been
the shuriken insects. They were told about the digging machine.
What are the shuriken insects all about, really? That never goes anywhere, really, does it?
I don't think it
does. Seems to disappear once we get to the lightning machine.
Yeah, yeah. It's just the kind of thing that happens in this situation.
It might actually
more
be
weird alien shit, event. As the doctor guy says in this episode. Yeah. What do you think this is? More weird alien shit.
I mean, it could just be a natural weather event.
I mean, maybe if they were alive. Or they were moving with intent. I'll say
there was a specific pattern to it, so that doesn't seem very weather-like.
I suppose
there could be some sort of you could stretch it. To
it's
go
like
that,
like seeing a susurration of starlings and being like, weird weather was weird this evening.
Okay, a nature event or whatever. Really. I mean, it could be seeds, for example, of a plant.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That would be cool.
Anyway, back to the doctor lady. Oh,
I'm out of focus, so I'm gonna just reset the camera. Sorry, I didn't want.
Doesn't your camera reset if you just like do that?
Maybe, kind of, but I know that turning it off and on again does it.
Fair enough. As it does with so many things. The point I was going to get to before we sidetrack about the Expanse, that's unusual, was that we then get Naomi's side of the story that we've only heard from Drummer and Marco in their conversation. Now we've heard Naomi's detailed version of events, which she probably did tell the details to Drummer as well, and that's probably why Drummer didn't believe Marco, but... Discuss.
sorry, series of events regarding what?
What? Her and Marco.
Oh, I see. Right,
sorry, that was a bit vague there, was it? The reason that she hates Marco, the reason he took her child and so forth, she had tech that was meant to be used to threaten and harass the inners, and he used it to destroy things.
I like the way Naomi deals with Planet Lady. Like the way she's like, there's a way to get, when she's like, there's a way to get from where you are to where I am. Like, you don't need to give up.
Yeah,
that's a very good character piece. But, and this is going to make me sound heartless, I know I should, but I do not give one shit about her relationship with Marco, the son stuff. I don't care at all.
I kind of don't either. I mean,
Not in like if that was a person in real life. Of course, I have empathy for that, but as a narrative motivation for me to care about where shit's going, I don't care. I couldn't care. I couldn't give a shit about her son. Couldn't give a shit about a relationship with Marco. The terrorist stuff is interesting, but like the interpersonal stuff, that's not what I'm here for. I don't give a fuck.
I'm not actually that interested in Planet Lady and the terrorist stuff. Certainly not to the depth that we've gone into it. Like Proto Molecule's interesting. Maybe some of the belts and stuff is interesting.
I think I'm with you on that. Yeah.
You know, I feel like the Western thing is a little bit over. Like it could have taken. You know, like it could have been.
It could have been an episode.
Longer. Yeah, really.
Or a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. Novel setting, everything like that. Mm. Space Western, but...
I think maybe they thought... Because as I've said before, this is a season I like the least. And I think maybe they were thinking, okay, let's do something off the ship. Let's do something on a planet. Like, you know, more interest. Let's vary it. But I don't want the variance. I want like, I liked what it was more. I like the ship and stuff. I like the... Yeah.
And I guess I find the planet itself, to be honest, to be a little bit... I find that to be one of the less believable parts of the sci-fi.
What's that
they can find a planet like that. That there's another planet.
Not this again. We've been through this already.
I know.
The gates are where the gates are.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I get that, but that notwithstanding, it just feels like it just feels because obviously the human being has evolved for Earth, and
it might be true that. All life in the universe is similar in terms of its chemistry. Like that might be a thing. I mean, I think that's possible. A thing that exoscientists do tend to think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's disagreement, I don't, but like, yeah, it's quite possible. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
So conditions for life are conditions for life.
And also, like, the conditions for life in our solar system have varied from planet to planet over the time as well. Such that if life had arisen at the right time on, say, Venus. Before it went, you know, there might have been people flying, you know, escaping to Earth by the time it got worse. And you know, the sort of slightly the opposite happened from Mars, you know, because they had something that was going, and then it didn't quite stay the same as it was, so they were destabilized and ended up not like Earth much anymore.
I think it doesn't help that the and I think this is budgetary. But the planet is quite boring looking.
It is, considering they talk desolate. About weird reptiles, and we see and like two trees in the distance and stuff. It's
it
like...
bothers me a little bit. There are obvious quarries that you can see from time to time. Like, okay, you could say that's alien rock formation, but I like if it had been. I know they couldn't have done this with the budget, but have you seen the modern Star Trek films?
Maybe the first one would.
On the second one, at the very start, they're down on a planet that's like very lush, and it's just like the trees have red leaves. It looks that immediately makes it look like alien and stuff. So like something like a lush foresty planet where there's something different about it. That would have been at least nicer to look at.
Yeah, because that could easily be on Earth, which obviously it probably was. probably on Earth.
Sometimes I think they probably have to film on Earth just because of the budget, as Drew says.
Yeah, but like Drew said, if they'd have just done like maybe a few little changes, aesthetic changes, just to make it feel a bit otherworldly, I think they were kind of
going for the sort of ruggedness of the how they were having to live as well, though. Because the thing to remember as well is that they set up near where they found the lithium deposits.
They could have had like green sand or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
like, I
don't know.
Something to make it look a bit more visually interesting rather than like.
Yeah, maybe. Even just some filters and stuff would do that.
Something like that. Yeah.
It is a bit. But I'm down on this season. This season, I think, and honestly, I think if you were watching The Expanse for The Expanse story, you could skip this season and it would affect nothing. And that's not true of any of the other seasons.
That's a bit teleological of you, Drew, isn't it?
Well, say nothing. Nothing is hyperbolic. Like, certain major plot lines do get moved along, but I don't think... Yeah. I mean, you can probably already tell at this point, are we halfway through the season-ish? Getting there?
Yeah. Five, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Nothing major has moved on a great deal, right?
Yeah.
In fact, we're not even dealing with any of the major
We're getting
stuff.
A bit of character stuff.
character stuff.
For sure. Yeah, especially with Amos.
Character stuff.
The Amosarama stuff has been a bit underwhelming, but also important. If you see,
I think the Avasarala stuff is the post corrupting her. I think what we talked about in a previous episode.
Yeah, we've already been through that.
Like,
yeah.
Or not corrupting is probably too strong, but limiting and like she said very early on, like she prefers to be the second in command because there's more freedom. You're more penned in when there's. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I suppose. Inigo.
Yeah, no, I mean, to me, this season feels like it's going to end with Murtry dying and Avasarala winning her seat. Maybe I'm wrong. But it feels like it's like this will be one of the series where, I don't know, the good guys win and the bad guys
are you
lose.
Willing to bet on either of those?
Yeah, we'll take bets on things.
I'll take bets.
Not giving you any odds, although we'll just make it all even. Because then otherwise you'll accuse us of giving things away.
No, because I'm not like, I mean, I think Murtry's going to die because he's set up like that character. Avasarala might, I don't know, she might join her, I don't know. There are other things that could happen to her, like I'm less confident about that one. I'm just saying how it feels so far, not necessarily, I'm not, that's not,
you know, I know.
Mm. But I but on the debate with Avasarala and
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, actually that for all it was kind of a dry political thing, it did actually have some drama in that section of the story for the first time in ages. And I don't just mean the end and where the, you know, the alert. Yeah. I mean the actual story part. Because it shows how both of them operate.
Mm.
And it also undermined Avasarala's assertion about, you know, nepotism or whatever.
Yeah.
Because
I think
that's where she won the debate. That's where Nancy Gow won the debate, was pointing out, yeah, under the system, I sort of cheated, but here's what would have happened anyway. You know, the system is not right.
Do we know why Avasarala is in the position she did? Is it if you're a wealthy family, you just get it? Is that
implied?
Yeah, like if you're a wealthy and powerful family, you just get the post, whereas everybody else has to do the lottery thing.
Yeah, because anybody that's below a certain level it seems like people who are above a certain level can't go below it again, and that's. No different than.
But I think Nancy Gow's response to, because Avasarala was like, "I've got this one," like I'm going to see smear, and like Gow's response,
she's been bad and we've caught her, sort of thing.
Yeah, at this point, like Gow's response is excellent, and at this point, I'm voting for Gow.
According to the poll, most people are as well.
But also, one of the things I think Gow missed a trick with is that when
she still looks great in black.
Avasarala was saying how I saved Earth last time because I stopped it. Eros, was it? I was there.
Yeah,
when, I was in
first
the,
of all, obviously, as the commander said. Now that feels a little bit like was that like Hillary Clinton or something when she or someone like that was in, like not really involved, but in the
situation room.
That's the word I was.
I was trying to remember it myself. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would have gone down the line of when they were taking those Martian platforms out in space, and then they hesitated, and then Mr. President Mann hesitated, and then that killed 2 million.
I'd also say the whole Eros situation was caused by Jean-Pierre Mao. Jean-Pierre Mao was left unchecked under your watch, essentially.
Yeah.
The Eros situation,
It was above her, but she did.
Sure, but her, she's part of the administration.
True.
And if she's going to claim credit for Eros, she's got to claim date responsibility
for Eros.
For Eros,
yeah.
Yeah, you're both right on that. Right, and then the next thing that happens, we find out that Marco Inaris didn't decide to sit on his hands and be a good boy. He lied to the Belters. He's undermined the position of the leadership of the OPA. So that's, you know, Anderson Dawes, Fred Johnson, and Drummer and Ashford have been completely undermined by him actually not scrapping the ship he said he scrapped. And using it as a weapon to try and take. And also, maybe I shouldn't. Do you know
Ashford was right all along, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have let, I wouldn't, well, I wouldn't have let him go for various reasons, but you know, this not being the not being the worst of it. Let's be honest, you know, he's a terrorist and he's got away. So what else is going to happen? Because they did effectively foil this plot. But do you remember what the target was, Chris?
What was it like? It was it wasn't a ship, was it?
No, it was an early warning system. Yeah.
No, I can't remember now.
That's what it was. It was an early warning system.
And so the bit where he said we've got children on board, that ended up being a lie then.
Yeah. We got that because they realized what the ship actually was, and that it was because they knew what ship. They knew the Sojourner was the ship that had been attacked, and they knew what happened to all the people on board. So you know.
Okay.
Actually, Marco kind of did himself the deception. He did himself out of that deception working better by, you know, deliberately showing off by killing the people and leaving them adrift.
Yeah.
To be seen by a drummer, you know.
Okay. Now that scene actually confused me a little bit. I didn't know if that was a botch or not on Avicerella's part.
No, she was right. The information she got given at the last second was what saved it. And that's how she was able to make the decision. Because if she tried to make the decision before that, she would have been like, yeah. She would have been trolley probleming before that. Mm. But once they realized, once she got the extra intel, it was like, she put two and two together and got that this is actually the ship that another terrorist had, blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know.
Good job, Christian.
Christian did a good job in that one, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So, there's her. Technically, that could have been her next answer to Nancy Gow if that had happened beforehand, you know.
Yeah. So, the thing is, I don't know if I gave an answer to the last episode as to whether or not I would have given him the thumbs up or the thumbs down.
We've all got teleological knowledge now that he's
teleologically let him live, unteleologically kill
him. Yeah, that's what you said, but last week I was the opposite last week,
and Chris last week
I don't think you made a choice. I think you just agreed with Kamina's reasoning. I think that's all you said about that. I don't think you actually gave him a friend. Whereas I think that given everything we knew about him, even up to the last week, see, maybe I'm swayed slightly by Naomi's part.
Yeah, I'm thinking, should I have taken Naomi more seriously in this?
Yeah, maybe that's what I did. And of course, this week we now know even more about him, about Marco, and even more about, you know, the information that they got back, the intel they got was only because he had been fucking about, and you know, otherwise the Bettlers wouldn't have, you know, the OPA people wouldn't have known. I wish there was a way to say the official OPA people and the, you know, the pirate OPA people in some way. I really wish the Bettler government had taken another name. Because it's a bit confusing because it's not really the OPA, but it is the OPA. So
they don't have a hierarchy. So I mean, this is partly, Not to give too much credit to the Inners, it's partly what gives the Inners problems when dealing with them, because who is speaking for them, and are you holding everybody to this? No, you're not. So,
but they kind of are trying to hold Drummer and Ashford to things, and Drummer Ashford, Drummer and Ashford did give reassurances.
Yeah,
or give assurances, and they've been fooled as well. So basically, Marco has fucked everybody essentially. And it's like that thing he says about let it all burn. You know, he's talking about just burning everything. If they kill him, then fine. Do you want to see? Do you want to see your space? You know, your station in the ring space burn? Do you want to see the Inners burned? You want to see everything burning, you know, and you get the feeling that maybe he wouldn't mind that.
Dickhead, he was dickhead.
Who'd have thought a terrorist, a mad murdering terrorist would be unreliable?
A little bit of me, I feel that one of my biggest flaws is that I
love terrorism. I know. I knew that.
I mean, I look for the best in people, even if it's not always there, you know?
Well, not just that. I mean, I do too. But it's not just that. I think putting aside my yes no vote, this isn't connected to that. Like, he's not wrong.
Yeah, but he's not wrong about something.
In the sense that they're never going to be treated equally by the inners. The only way to get the security that they need is to prove,
take power in some way. But he's talking about doing it by murdering, and I mean, he murdered a lot of civilians to do that.
I mean, it's a bit like the IRA, I would say.
It's not as close to that as the other things they've done in the past. I mean, this is piracy and profit. You know, he didn't do it for profit like some of the other pirates had done. He did it. He's building something with his connections to Mars and everything. He's trying to build something that might be more dangerous rather than a...
Yeah, but rhetorically, he's talking about, like the IRA, like hurting them enough that they have to give you respect, essentially, like what you want. Such concessions. Yeah. Like,
he's
not wrong in that part of his argument. Mm. But then he talks about a scorched earth policy if he personally dies.
I think that's representative of the kind of person who can do those kind of things. And I think if doing those kind of things is necessary, then you need those kind of people to do those things. And those people are never going to be good people. But those things might. I mean, and proof of what he's saying is Illus, really. The way the Belters are being treated on Illus. Like, your claim is illegitimate. Only the inners get to say what claims are legitimate and what claims aren't.
I don't disagree with that, yeah.
It's proof of what he's saying. Like, they're never going to be treated fairly unless they prove that they can hurt them.
Yeah, but what makes this different to basically anything else in the world, right, is the rings, right? So a lot of the Belters, now this is if they were developing a new world in another system, that would be where I think the inners and the Belters should sort of move. I don't say, oh, okay, this sounds bad. I think the force of the OPA should be on protecting, like, the people on Islas.
Because the Indians, I agree, like, morally, I agree with you.
So you're saying the OPA, the Tynan and the little fleet they've got that they took out or scared off Marco's ship with, you're saying that should be out around Illus.
Well, they could use Medina Station. Maybe, and just say like nobody gets to go through to Illus apart from Belter. But I think doing that, I think that would, like, because the Inyas don't look at the Belters as equals, I think that would just lead to
war. Yeah. Well, it's also breaking the agreements that they made.
I don't think the Inyas would accept that. They would go not only because of their material interest, but almost in a pride way. Like, you don't get to tell us what to do, and then it would be war. I think.
Yes, maybe. I don't know.
And I think Marco's point is, like, there's going to be a war. If we're ever going to be equal, there's going to be a war. So let's hit them hard first. Let's weaken them.
Again, like, I'm not
saying necessary plans in particular, but as a
deterrent.
Yeah. No. I mean, what? Like, that's his. Position, like that's his political position, is we need to prove to them if they fuck with us, we hurt them, kind of thing.
But they could have done that more like the way that Black Sky or whatever tried to do before.
What was that?
Attacking political targets.
Yeah.
Which to me would make that would hurt them more than killing civilians, because fucking the politicians don't give a shit about civilians, and that's been the case. It's the case right now, you know. Look at Lockerbie. There's a good example of some, right? Imagine that was, you know, the Sojourner or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't quite mesh up, but you get the idea. So a bunch of civilians get killed, and it all gets covered up because there's all sorts of other things going, and then somebody has to take the fall for it. Who may or may not be part of it, but he's either been given up as a sacrificial lamb or he's been used as a patsy. One of the, you know, but whatever way it goes, that's how the government reacts.
Well, which do you think, in the case of Northern Ireland, which do you think forced the UK government's hand more? Like when they killed police officers and army personnel, or when they like bomb Warrington? And because I think the civilian ones do force the government's hand.
I'm not sure it would force them now. I think they've got even more hardened to that shit because they've worked out the propaganda for fighting against terrorism.
I think that's right, though. Yeah, I think that's right.
The propaganda's stronger now.
That's fair, yeah.
And especially if the enemy, as it were, are brown people, which is what is the prevailing thing.
Yeah.
And they've even used that to justify genocide in Palestine they're basically taking the side of the nominally white people, nominally more rich people over the poorer people and the brown people.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, and I suppose at the time these events mattered more to Thatcher or whatever, but
I mean, it's also a risky thing because it can go either way. Either they concede or it's all out war.
Or they become less popular amongst their own base. Yeah, there's no point being freedom fighters for people that don't want you to do what you're doing. Yeah. They'll lose sympathy for that. If the people that are supporting the IRA in a moral sense.
Also, to be clear, like, I'm not morally justifying the bombing of Warrington, right?
or anywhere else, it was
morally abhorrent. It was politically, I would argue it was politically effective, but...
Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah. We're not taking a moral stance on this. We're taking it in a historical perspective. The thing that bothers me, as I say, isn't that he's right or wrong about his general... view. It's the thing about it's when he starts the sort of maniacal ranting and raving and the right, okay, you kill me, then it's a scorched, not even scorched earth, it's scorched everything. And that to me says whatever else he is, he's not the person that should be in charge of any sort of revolutionary army.
Yeah, I agree with that. He should be under somebody's control, but I do think that's the kind of person it takes to do those kind of acts that may not be politically necessary.
I don't know. Scorched earth might be where you go from terrorist into Bond villain, right?
Like that's the point, isn't it? That's what he's kind of like. Yeah. He is kind of a sort of Hitler, Mussolini, Trump type figure. But much more charismatic and partially in the right, and also, sexy man.
Shame on him for being so sexy.
Well, it's a TV show. They don't want unattractive men for these roles, do they?
No. We have to see. We have to see shirtless Holden at least once a season.
That's true. Apparently, he's got it written in his contract since he's got producer's credits now.
Speaking of Holden, he seems to be properly caught in the middle of this. But I think his ego is proper, like, it kind of, I think, should be checked. Like,
It seems like Naomi sort of unleashed him a wee bit more than checking him.
How do you mean? Sorry, what are you saying? What do you mean?
He's kind of being like, everyone should listen to me because.
I mean, that's not ego, though. He literally does have inside information.
Yeah, and that's. I mean, it's good that the rest of the Rosnanti crew and a few other people around them have seen enough to go, actually, it's not just luck. Because that's what the leader woman says is, you've come up with this mad story and you've got a few lucky guesses. That could be the case as well, I don't think she's saying that's what's happened, but she is
suitably
sceptical, shall we say.
Yeah, I think actually in this entire circumstance, Naomi was the proper voice of reason, where she's saying that, like, it's not really any single person's fault
that it's all come to
a head.
Yeah.
But it's like the best you can do is provide the information you've got and let people make the decision themselves.
And I
think Holden came around to it. So, but
and I like that, the little be Holden thing, because she says to him, go and be yourself or whatever, and then when he arrives at this camp, Amos says, no, what is he, you know, no,
oh, yeah,
Chandra says, "What is he doing?" And Amos says, "I'm being him," you know.
Yeah. I always find it interesting that they've all got, is it Tachi jackets now?
Tachi. Some of them have still got Tachi jackets, yeah.
Tachi, yeah.
Which is the original name of the Rosanna, yeah. But, that, yeah. You know, they've still got all the supplies and everything they had on board, you know, the military supplies and the uniforms and stuff. Yeah. And remember, it was meant for a larger crew, more officers and Marines on it and stuff, so they probably got a supply of them.
Yeah, but they didn't get an embroider, did they, to sort of update the
yeah. The another thing, just a little thing, but I think it's interesting and it helps to... I think it helps balance the way that the Belter people see things. Every time there's any sort of meeting or gathering, this is the first time that, that Holden has gone in the middle.
Mm.
Whenever there was trouble before, him and Murtry were always on the same behind the same cover or whatever, if you want, you know. Yeah. Or when he came to the planet and he met him and he was, you know, he didn't disrespect the, you know, the Belter people, but he almost seemed to have more respect for Murtry a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think respect is necessarily the right. I know what you mean. I don't think it's quite respect, but it's more like. He saw him as having actual authority. He's calling him the same thing as, like, he recognizes you've got actual authority, whereas you're just a rabble. Like, he was, you know.
Yeah, and that was unusual for Holden, I think. To take, especially to not be in the middle, even to not, because it's especially that first episode where the three of them, you know, the Belter women, leader women, Murtry, and Jem all get together.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a it always felt a bit uncomfortable to me that he kind of, it was almost as if he was in the, you know, it's like there was a slightly in the shot, a slightly sort of moving towards them, even, you know, physically, I mean, in the shot, even it seemed like they were like they were trying to say something about it, you know, anything else.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
And I think
yeah.
that points to why the Belters rather still have a, you know, they got to the point where they think Holden and Murtry are together. And I mean, Amos was able to separate himself a little bit, but then he started a relationship with one of the soldiers. So it's like,
To be fair to Holden a little bit, I think part of it is just that both he and Murtry were sent on Earth's authority.
Yeah, they were both sent.
They're essentially working in the same structure. But I do think that had Holden explicitly sort of not allied himself, but gone to the Belters first and recognized them as the authority on this planet and dealt with them more directly, I think that everything would have gone better.
Yeah, I think so.
I do agree with you. Yeah.
But his obsession was with the, you know, the technology. Mm. Is that pizza you've got, by the way? On that front, I made a big pot of really big pot, in fact, biggest pot I've got of carrot and red onion soup with cream, with a bit of cream as well.
Nice.
And it was really fucking good. I've had like two huge bowls of it today since I made it because I got a new blender.
I love soup.
I got a new hand blender now. Paul, if he's watching this, he probably won't. I don't think he's interested in this show. But Paul, the nerd Paul, Northern Ireland Paul, he's a chunky soup fan. But I'm a smooth soup fan. So I boiled it all up till it was, you know, till everything was a bit softer. I don't want to give away my secrets. There's a couple of other ingredients in there. But, you know, it's cream of carrot and red onion soup is what I'll call it.
Cannabis.
No, well, maybe because I'm taking it to my family, to my mum and Alan, so giving them some. But I got the new hand blender, so yeah. But the thing is, my mum as well. Now my mum likes smooth soup the same as me, but she doesn't like thick soup. So she doesn't like chunky and thin. She likes it like she'll take a can of what I would just. I'd put the whole can in and heat it up and have it as my soup. She'll put half a can in, top it up with water, and then have that. So it's still a smooth soup, but it's a thinner smooth soup. It's, you know. There you go. That was a weird sidetrack. But yeah,
I think for me,
in fact, I'll go and get it just to show you.
There's three categories of acceptable soups.
Mm-hmm.
There's soup, which I prefer smooth, and I don't care, I don't care whether it's thick or not. There's broth, which should be thin broth, but they can have chunks in it, big things in it, and stew, which is chunky. I don't like medium-sized chunks, basically. I want big chunks, and that's stew, or soup, which is smooth.
I tend to opt for smooth all the time, really.
I love a stew. Hey,
sorry?
I love a stew.
Ooh, there we go.
That's a good stew.
Oh, it's looking good.
Oh, this is going to be like, what's his face from The Office? He's just going to...
Kevin!
Kevin from The Office, yeah.
But yeah, no, I like smooth with bread, really. That's my
I love bread. Yeah, got a bread with soup for sure. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, do you have your
life food?
There you go. Does this doesn't quite make it a mukbang podcast, but we're getting there. what's
a mukbang? Oh,
what do people eat?
Oh, I see, right.
Is it a Japanese Korean word? Korean, yeah.
Oh, also on the food side, I knew there was two things I wanted to say. One is I made that soup, and it was really even it's cooled down now, but it still smells really nice. It's always better the second day when you make homemade soup as well. So yes. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow. Yeah. I also went to somewhere that I rarely go, but that you like, Drew, today.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess?
To a place?
To a place with food.
McDonald's.
Yes, yeah. Because it was on the way home from visiting my mom. I had a triple cheeseburger, which was the same fucking size as all the other burgers. It was like that thin. But I added bacon to it. Which I know you don't like, but...
The double quarter pounder with cheese is like, I think they're only actually substantial.
Yeah, well, see, I thought this was going to be like that, but bigger, but it wasn't. It was like that. Next time I'm going to get the double quarter pounder plus bacon, I think.
Well, I mean,
maybe do that tomorrow, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I like the McPlant, and that's a relatively substantial burger because they use, a Beyond Beef burger.
Mm.
But it's...
I should try that.
I do recommend it. I'd be interested to see if
I had it as an extra thing to try. Yeah, I wouldn't want to make my whole meal that.
You don't want to risk it.
No, I wouldn't risk it. But I mean, I came out of McDonald's, and I'd also had about half of. Alan says he normally gets like a normal size meal, but he had a large chips and a large drink, and then he couldn't finish the chips. So I had about half of his chips as well.
I can't imagine somebody not being able to finish a McDonald's.
Yeah, because they're not that big, but he's obviously not a big eater, you know.
Yeah, but they are nothing.
What I used to get, this is going to, I can't really lie about it. You've seen the physique of the Hamish. When I used to live next to McDonald's, like it was like a couple of streets away just.
Because
I was near the main road, and then across the main road was a McDonald's. And they had like, it was basically a case of poverty food, I suppose. They had like a 99p menu or a 69p menu or something.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So I would get like three of the 69p burgers, you know, that would be just about enough to feed you, you know, to fill you up. Sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, that's a lot of carbs over all the buns.
The thing that stops me from getting a large meal is that really, like for me, there's not like a large drink doesn't. I don't want a large drink.
No, I like a large drink. I'm a thirsty person.
And they don't make a bigger burger with the
meal. No, you still get the same burger. Yeah.
You're paying a pound for.
Back when I went to McDonald's physically, it was a cup of tea. Always had a cup of tea. It's not good tea, but a chocolate milkshake before that when I was young. I do like McDonald's milkshakes. They're I don't think there's a case anymore. I think they used to be made of like potato starch essentially. Like they're not
probably,
but they were gloopy and chocolatey. It was good, but yeah, a cup of tea is my regular.
See, for me, black coffee. So it's not even worth like that's just like.
When I was a student, I used to have coffee with me, and I actually think McDonald's coffee is very good.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
I know that will like you know the coffee connoisseurs will be
I
up
don't
and
drink,
on.
I don't
like,
drink coffee, yeah, but so
the
I coffee, no
the coffee connoisseurs are wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah, connoisseurs because, in general need to fuck off.
True.
But the reason why it's good coffee is because you know that McDonald's have done all the market testing to work out the middle of the road coffee that most people
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah. This is the blandest you get it.
It's what you expect when you eat coffee.
Yes. And it's
it's good. To me, it's like, you know, when this is going to be weird, but like when I watch 70s films and they just have like, it's in like, you know, like it's about journalists or like office, some kind of office, and they've just got a filter coffee thing, and it's been probably the same coffee for 3 days, and they just pour a cup, and it's like probably a bit too strong and like a bit overbrewed and whatnot. That's the coffee I like. And there's a romance to that for me. And McDonald's coffee is that kind of coffee.
Do you think? I mean, when's the last time you had a McDonald's coffee?
I mean, 20 years ago plus.
Probably changed.
Last time I had a coffee was 20 years ago plus.
Yeah, it's a lot smoother now, and it's a lot like
it used to be almost espresso. Like between filter coffee and espresso, I would say like very strong, very bitter.
Well, you get McCoffee now anyway, don't you? What's it called? Starbucks. It's basically McCoffee, isn't it?
Starbucks is a little bit more flair to Starbucks, but to be honest, it's not worth the extra money that you pay for it. Starbucks is not cheap.
I expected it to be a cheap thing.
I'm an old man about coffee. Like, coffee is coffee. A latte is some kind of fucking milkshake. And then when people have a latte with like cream on it as well, that's not fucking coffee. And a fucking chai latte, like all that bullshit coffee. Coffee is coffee.
Boomer.
All that stuff is, you know, absolutely. But all of that other, like, milky fucking ass shit. Get it out of here.
Yeah.
It's ass like shit coffee as opposed to that other shit.
Yeah. Woke has ruined woke coffee.
You heard it here, folks. Woke has ruined coffee. Comes straight from the mouth of Drew.
Coffee. And I don't care. Like, I'm not like, you need beans from this. Fuck all that connoisseur bullshit. But coffee is espresso. Or black coffee, black filter coffee.
Well, what about black Americano?
What is that?
That is an espresso, but topped up with hot water so that that's what I usually have.
Coffee. Yeah. Mm. I mean, if you want to add milk, if you don't like your coffee black, that's fine. Add milk, but not a latte where it's like 90% milk and, you know, no, fuck off. That's a milkshake.
It's a bit rich for me, and is a lot of calories in lattes as well.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Hundreds. In fact, two coffees is probably about the same as a coffee and a half is probably about the same as a Big Mac, I would say, off the top of my head. Yeah,
I'd rather have a Big Mac and a glass of water,
like a large coffee.
Well, not a Big Mac specifically, but you know.
Yeah, like a burger from McDonald's.
Yeah, not a fan of the Big Mac itself.
Mm. Well, so especially given how fucking inaccurate the name is.
It's not big.
No.
And it's not Scottish.
Oh, that was it. I was in Bristol yesterday. No, the day before. When was it? Oh, God. Sorry, the last few days I've been there. The point is, I was in Bristol going to the hospital to see Mum. Before she moved to the hospice, that's why. And we passed a pub called The Scotchman. Not the Scotsman. Not the Scottish man or the Scotsman. The Scotchman.
Is that just like a Scotch egg, but with cannibalism?
Don't know. I was wondering if it's like the you know, it's a whiskey reference rather than a nationality reference, you know, Scotchman. But it was one word. Yeah. It was one word, though, so it was...
Did you not feel seen and represented?
Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
And also, fuck Bristol. It's a fucking nightmare city. I mean, it's a city, so they're all nightmare cities. But Bristol,
it's got particularly bad public transport, hasn't it? I've heard, for its population and density.
It was a nightmare trying to get parked even in the vicinity of the hospital, even streets away.
Well, that's because hospitals sold all their fucking car parks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hospitals used to have car parks that were free.
No. I think if the government sold the car parks to make money. The people that were in the government at the time sold the car parks to pocket the money. Yeah.
And then legally, they didn't have to provide free parking for hospitals, so let's sell it and get a bunch of money.
Yeah, let's keep the law like that. So anyway, so there's no car parks, is the point. But the thing is, that was the first thing. So we parked like so far away. Then Bristol, in certain bits of Bristol, it's like a fucking it's like a roller coaster walking from one street to the next. You know, it's like such a steep, steep hills and everything. So it was a real, it's just a pain in the arse just to walk a few streets.
I like Bristol. I quite like Bristol.
Depends which parts you go to. If you go into the centre of Bristol where it's flat and there's nice shops, yes. Everywhere else, no. where do you go in Bristol? I mean, if you go from the Temple Meads side and then up to the shops and things, Cabot's, that new bit, Cabot Circus, all that bit's fine because it's been made Cabot for pedestrians, Circus, basically, so you can come on a train or come on a park and ride or whatever. But if you're trying to get into the city and get to the other side or anything, oh, no. But then I'm not a big fan of cities generally, even the good ones.
I mean, the ring road has got me most of the way to where I need to go.
They've changed a lot of that. Again, it's like every 2 years or so they completely re-fucking do the roads and everything. Because I remember, this must be about 20 years ago now, a bit less maybe, but there was a part where you used to just drive through somewhere and they changed it to be a filter lane for the car park only. And it was it was like barriered so you couldn't get back into the other lane. And you had to pay to get through the car park. And I'm sure that wasn't... I'm sure there was a bit of a ploy there. But then the next time I went there was only about 4 or 5 years later. That same road had been completely changed into like a junction there. So like you went... You know, there was a little lane... There was a lane where you could go into that same building where the car park was. And also it had a through which went around the building, and then there was also a forward and off to the other side. So it was like, yeah, it's totally changed again within a few years. But I'm thinking the most recent time I was in Bristol, apart from literally recently, like the last week, I'd been at, it was for a gig. So this would have been I've not got that T-shirt anymore. Or could I just turn around and say, what does it say for Bristol Academy? And that was a completely different bit of Bristol, and that was actually okay as well, apart from other things that happened, but that's neither here nor there.
Best UK city I've been to is Manchester. Nice looking city, and it's got trams.
Yeah, Manchester's all right. To be honest, Glasgow's not bad.
Yeah, Glasgow looks nice. I've never been, but
it's easy to walk around as well, which is what a city should be concerned with.
Yeah.
Not fucking letting everybody and their dog park a car, at the front door of fucking M&S or something, that's why Bath is not that, it annoys me, and it's not as nice a city as a lot of the other ones. It's a bit up its own arse, and it's touristy, so basically another Edinburgh. But again, like the park and ride from any of the villages and towns around here to Bath, to outside Bath and then getting the bus to Bath is absolutely fine, It's absolutely grand,
I do need a piss, so...
You have a space piss and we'll try and work out where we were in the expanse.
Well, there was one bit that I have feelings about. When Avicerella's training for her interview...
And that's an interesting scene, that. She seems to... I don't think they conveyed that they'd been doing it for a while, and that's why she was losing her patience. It seemed like she just threw the toys at the pram right away, doesn't it?
But also, I kind of get it, right? I get what Avicerella's sort of coming... Like, to me, it strikes me as very much like Democrat-era campaigners, or consultants, rather, where it's like...
You're way off-centre, by the way. I don't know if you know.
I am, aren't I? Yeah, I'll get back in my chair.
You'll go back in your chair.
where it's like... and I know that this is maybe a little bit geared more towards us as the viewer, but it's like... The real Avicerella would be the one that is kind of like... It feels like the advice she's given is to temper her authenticity, and
I suppose it is a bit, yeah.
And I think that
it's like they're trying to polish her up when she was already she already had an image, a strong image, and they're trying to make her, as they say, they wanted to try and make her a kindly matriarch or something like that. Is what they say, isn't it? And that's not really who she is, or how she got to stay where she was politically.
Exactly.
So it doesn't really make much sense from the advisor's point of view,
No, so I think we're supposed to kind of take Avicerella's side on that one, where it's like, yeah. Fuck the consultant.
I do feel that that scene was not built up properly, though. I feel that they should have had they could have done something to sort of impress upon us that she'd been there for a while, or that she'd been trying this more than once. It just seemed like she sat down, tried it for 2 seconds, and went, oh, fuck this. That's what it felt like, you know? Like she...
she's
got headphones.
I was straining to hear you a bit with one earphone, so I'm resorting to headphones, which I hate wearing.
Oh.
But they'll but do.
We were talking about, because I think you might have something to say about this. Avicerella
I'm sorry, but you're so much bassier in these. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Funky.
That was a good, like, fantasy orc noise or something, like orc voice, troll voice.
The orc.
And nobody clip that bit out and misuse it, whatever you do.
And don't put anything in my mouth.
Yeah, I was actually going to say it. Also, some of the positions of the mouth there were quite lending themselves to misuse as well.
The Avicerella and her consultants. I bet you don't like her consultants, do you, Drew? I didn't.
Oh,
like them.
No, when she told them to fuck off, that was great.
Sorry, but I'm hearing Chris twice at the moment.
Are you really?
Yeah.
It must be from me then, because I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't hear anyone twice except myself. Right, no, I'm not hearing myself twice.
No, it's gone. That was weird.
Okay.
I thought maybe Drew had left the speakers on or something.
No. Hang on. Say something.
Something.
Hello.
1, 2, 3, 4.
No, speakers aren't there.
I don't know what it was.
One of the problems is that I can't hear myself. I need the monitor thing going back into my ears, which is what I used to do when I used to use these. But
yeah, I've got to have that. Along with my subtle effects and
Tumba.
See, when this all gets written down in the script, it absolutely makes no sense to read it on the page. But then it comes together.
Well, it comes to life on reality.
I was just hoping that I would run over my earphones with my chair, and we got lucky.
Yep. Well, you had the stunt earphones, didn't you?
Yes.
Got to have the stunt ones handy. Yeah. So Avicerella's advisors. Yeah.
Oh yeah, when she tells us that. I mean, one of them
is hot. Again, really severe plain grey dress, but that somehow works quite nicely.
I know what you mean with that. But they're also a bit of a lazy, like, this is what political like operatives are like.
Yeah, we're kind of talking about that, saying that they're trying to. Well, this is what Chris was getting. Sorry, Chris, you make your point again if you want, but Avicerella already has an image, was what we got to the point, and she's already stayed in power by having that image and that authority figure thing. And this, we want you to come across as a caring matriarch thing is bollocks, you know?
I don't think she's ever been elected before, has she? So, I mean, you could argue that it is a different...
No, she got into the job through rising through the ranks, as it were.
Yeah. So they might be right, but even if they're right, fuck off.
But it's hard to believe she's like third in command of Earth and she hasn't won an election.
She hasn't had to
be challenged for that job, though.
Think about the White House, right? You've got the president, he's elected, kind of.
Like we've got Musk at the moment. For anybody watching, it's 2025.
Chief of Staff, it depends from president to president, but like Chief of Staff is probably the second most powerful person in that building. Cabinet members don't have to be elected. They often are from the Senate and stuff, but the cabinet members don't have to be elected. I don't think, I'm pretty sure about that. There's a lot of very powerful, and obviously tons of advisors that are just completely unelected. And I think she was that. Although, I mean, they did call a deputy undersecretary, which sounds like... Although I guess undersecretary is like chief of staff, might just not be an elected position at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily that she's got... I don't know, it just feels like, I mean, forgiveness, but, she's a woman of a certain age, and she's an established woman in a career, and it's like, maybe not necessarily for the roles that she's hosting now, but isn't there some kind of local council or something that she stood for?
Yeah, I mean, maybe she did come up through that sort of thing,
I don't think so.
I'm not sure it was because of what Drew says as well. There's a certain degree of being able to do what
and,
they want.
And so. Then she's got the gall to talk about nepotism to Gao.
Yeah,
well, yeah, we covered that slightly earlier, didn't we? We did say it's kind of it is a. But Gao also gives them. Is it this time or last time that she, it might have been last episode where she said, "Well, she's never had to interview for a job before, you know, or something like that."
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
That was one of her little jibes at Avisar Allah, and it's, you know, yeah. I mean, that's the other end of, as you say, it's the other end of what she's saying. So
but also, like,
the point is, both of them were fucking basically, you know, elevated to a position by contacts. Yeah. I suppose that's the point that we're supposed to see from the outside, is that the system's fucked.
Well, to be fair, that's Gao seems to be making that point. Like, this system
is
shit.
Yeah, she does seem to be saying it, and it is shit, but I'm trying my best with what we've got, sort of thing.
One of my disappointments
Can I just finish one more thought on that point? The problem with that idea, though, that making the best of what I've got is usually used as an excuse to do fucking awful things. Yes. Not to actually do the best of what they've got. So, you know, sorry, Chris, carry on, bud.
The bit that I disliked in terms of the framing of the debate was the idea that, like, it's the fetishization of work. We see it in today's politics as well, where it's like, not everyone has a job, but for some reason everyone wants a job.
And it's aren't there any artists and musicians and performers of, you know, theatre? And does that have to be a paid job if everybody's on basic? Why can't they just do those things?
I mean, what we would argue for if we existed in that world is basic should just be a lot more. This should be shared out a bit more. I mean, it depends. We don't know the economics of the UN at that point. But yeah, just the basic should be
it's quite obvious that Avisar Allah and quite a few of the other people on her level that we see have large properties. Mm. You know, when there's a shortage of space, they have... I mean, she's got an outfit. She's sometimes got two outfits in a day and stuff, you know, so she's not...
I mean, just like...
Fancy jewellery, you know.
To play devil's advocate here, right, would it be that unworkable if every single person just earned the same wage regardless of what they were doing?
Well, that's...
I think that's
a difficult one to answer, actually.
The argument usually mobilized against, and I don't know, but the argument usually mobilized is, well, why would people do the hard jobs? Why would people become doctors and architects and things when you can make the same money working at your local spa or whatever? Or, I mean, that's not an easy job, but you know what I mean? There are jobs that are less taxing than...
And less stressful, yeah.
But then, I think people do that for prestige. I don't think they do it primarily for money. Yeah. But also,
doesn't, like... I mean, it does. Is it not a valid criticism that, like,
If what you're saying is are a lot of people overpaid, I'll say yes, definitely.
Mm. Yes.
The disparity between like the workforce and upper management and ownership is huge. Mm. There should be a limit or a higher taxation. I mean, higher taxation works.
I don't think it should even be per organization. I think there should be a legal ratio of the minimum wage that people are allowed to work. The problem with that is that just because people at the very top, they don't make most of the money from salaries. They make most of the money from share options or equity share options and investments, essentially, like asset inflation.
And other ways of dodging tax.
Other ways of dodging tax. Do you take it, like, you'd have to take into account their entire income, regardless of how it's earned.
Yeah, I mean, that's why these hierarchies exist. That's why these weird organizations weird arrangements exist. It's to make it more difficult. It's to obfuscate the difference between them and.
There's a very large multi-billion-dollar cooperative in Spain called Mondragon. Mondragon, I think it's called.
Oh, Mondragon. Yeah,
and it was set up. It was set up by, I think, a Benedictine monk. Way back in the day, who just conditions were shitty, so in his village he just started a co-op, and it's become one of the biggest companies in the world. And it's not an ideal cooperative, like there's argument as to what's cooperative, what's not cooperative, but it is a cooperative. It has, you know, ratios between what the bottom worker and the top worker can make. Everybody has profit share. That should be the worst that capitalism gets to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you could do something like, if everyone has a bank account, right? And there is like a limit to how much that can go into that, like an ISA, how much money can go into that bank account, how much money can come out of that bank account.
Again, though, we come back to the system would then be manipulated such that they would find a way to push the money sideways. Let's put, you know, is basically what would happen. It's like, well, I've been talking a lot about inheritance tax and all that sort of nonsense lately, and it seems a lot harsher and more unfair the less money you've actually got.
Oh, yeah.
There's a little bit where it doesn't really matter, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's this huge bit in the middle where the poorer people, you know, middle class, if you like, are getting screwed massively. No,
the poorest always get paid. Yeah. Always it's always like if you want a loan, if you've got tons of, because very rich people do take out loans because, you know, they'd rather take out a loan at very low interest than use their assets. And so when Elon Musk applies for a loan, it's incredibly low interest. If you or I apply for a loan, it would be like crippling interest.
And also a lot of wealthy families incorporate themselves in all kinds of ways you know, they're living off the family business assets.
Another argument, back to Arrested Development, actually.
I've got two points. So first of all, Arrested Development and Ozark are the same show, just one's a comedy and one isn't. I said Ozark because it's got Bateman in it. Arrested Development and Succession are the same show.
Yeah.
But one's a comedy and one isn't, basically. and the other thing, I think the other argument that they mobilize against things like that about putting limits on wealth is, well, we need wealthy people to invest in stuff. We will scare all the wealthy people will leave and invest somewhere else, right? That's the argument used, which is bollocks. There's so many implications to that which are absolute fucking nonsense. Also, China executes billionaires and they seem to be doing okay economically. So
you're getting one thing right then.
There was a thing.
We've only executed one in the West so far. We're so behind China in so many.
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear? I heard some really good news. I mean, maybe this is old news, and I'm a few days behind. But I heard that I can't remember what it was. It was some sort of, I know, it was an AI thing. Apparently, there's China have developed an AI system which works more efficiently than the big American ones that have come out of, you know, Silicon Valley or whatever, and uses less resources, thereby proving that you can still do the same thing with a little. But the point now, one that amuses me, and they've kind of, and people are saying it's kind of like Russians getting into space first sort of thing, and I think that's probably true, and that would be quite a good way for a Cold War to develop, given the nutters that are going to be in charge in the next few years, if it's just a space race or a technology race. Because that the space race, although it had a lot of downsides, and you know there was probably a better way to spend the money in a general way for the public of America, at least it did create technologies and jobs and so forth in the long run. In the way, you know, in the wider thing. So maybe a technology race where it's not just billionaires investing in things and, you know, bubbles that burst, but actually trying to achieve one thing over each other might actually be a good thing. That's one thing. The other thing I think of is, you know, you guys are doing all this fucking song and dance, bullshit rounds of investments and the propagandizing of AI and getting it into all sorts of products. And you know, and then somebody else just does it a different way and cheaper and more efficient, as you know. One last point on that. And the other point of it is, of course, it's still technology with no fucking real use. You know, there are some cases where it is, but overall it is not, it's not a solution that has a problem that needs to be solved, you know?
Mm. Yeah, they came up with the solution, and now they got to work backwards.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's why you get, and that's why you get the AI apologists saying, "Oh, but it's good for this specific type of data." And looking at these things, you know, we've had examples that we've used in the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh yeah, looking at these things that humans might miss this, but an AI would flag all these up or whatever.
I mean, if you were to ask AI, it'd probably tell you that it'd be great at suggesting soup recipes.
Yeah.
Although I have read, but I have no idea if this is bullshit or not, that the AI sort of data mongering can be quite good for vaccines and stuff like that, for evolving.
Is that propaganda, or is that something real? Well,
there are definitely applications to which LLMs and that kind of AI.
Yeah, let's not call them AI, because that's the problem.
What they call not combative, that's the wrong word. The combative neural nets, there's a word for... Basically, you make neural nets compete with itself, basically, to get better. Those kind of, like, AIs, there's things they're very good at, like pattern recognition. Like I said, I mean, the example Collier uses in that video is classifying galaxies. You've got millions of pictures of galaxies and you want to classify them. An AI classifier is very good at that. They are tools, but we're trying to, it's trying to put them into consumer products where they have literally no fucking purpose or benefit.
And also, the money people are trying to look for a way to get rid of people and put this AI in place. But they're very quickly finding that they need somebody to then come and check the work of the AI.
You sack the people, use the AI, realize the AI needs adult supervision, hire the people back as consultants, pay them less with no benefits.
Which is also perfectly, and you know, they're perfectly happy to do that.
They don't care
about the quality of the work or anything in the long run. They just want to keep the profits up.
Yeah, but also, like, the thing is that for a lot of jobs, checking the work is more difficult than doing the work itself.
Or at least it's as much work, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like finding a good proofreader. Is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, because it is very easy when you're reading. Yeah, I mean, I know this from doing a bit of editing and proofreading in the past. It's easy for your brain to fall into the pattern of the mistake that was made, and you've got to kind of detach yourself a bit to look.
I think there's a poem, something like, literally called "The Futility of Proofreading Your Own Work." the mistake you make the first time, you make when you're reading it as well.
You know how you always hear these AI fuck up stories as well? There's a really good one going around at the moment, again, whether it's true or not, because I'm not going to go and try that AI to see what the answer is, because I'm not going to fucking add to the carbon footprint of the damn thing by actually testing it. But it's that water won't freeze at a certain point because it's lower than the threshold.
I saw that one, and it is, as a
programmer, you can see the simple logic that's caused that.
Yeah.
But obviously AI doesn't have that.
It also doesn't know what sarcasm is.
There's as much likelihood that somebody's made a joke about that or sarcastically said that's what's got into it. And that's they're almost shooting themselves in the foot by just mass data gathering to do it, because they're mass data gathering, including all the shit.
Yeah.
You know, and then adding to the shit. It's just like...
Because the AI at no level, which is why Collier said... What's her first name? I can't just...
Angela.
Angela Collier. It's why she says it's not, you know, she keeps saying it's not real. It's not AI. It's not AI. It's not AI because it doesn't know... No, at no point does it know what the words mean.
Yeah, it doesn't know what it's talking about. It's putting together patterns. It's spotting patterns and putting them together. Yeah. And it's convincing... But you know,
it was like an author was saying that it doesn't write sentences; it writes sentence shaped things.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's the same thing with the pictures. If like on I like a lot of like ambient sounds and stuff like that. So if I want that, I go to YouTube. Mm. But I've noticed that a lot of these ambient sound videos will just have an AI picture just to fill the screen or whatever. And over time, like, I will spot more, like, the initial impression of this AI picture, which will be like a cabin by the woods or some sort of vague. And at first it'll look, you'll know it's generally AI off the bat because it will have that AI style to it. Mm-hmm. But the more you look at it, the more you start seeing the beams that don't line up or the windows that don't really make sense where they are. The tree branches growing back into itself in a way that wouldn't, you know, and it's like, on initial first impression, that picture was very convincing.
But the
more I look at it, the more I realize that they've just done a picture that is like, what? It's not like I'm going to draw a branch because that's what a branch looks like. I'm going to do a pattern of colors and lines in that a way
somebody
that
has told me is what a branch is.
Lots of people have told me it's what a branch is. It's like it's a trick. Like it's tricking you into thinking that it's a branch, and it's like this. That's kind of, in some ways, I find it even more interesting because it's like, you're not actually painting a branch. You're painting what's supposed to fool me into thinking it's a branch.
Yes,
like a human.
Yeah, I mean, painting of a branch is not a branch. Well, we're getting into.
Well, I was literally just going to say, "Sessiness pound, but beep." That's for Ghosty. Yeah, the Magritte. Yeah, it's literally getting. Yeah, well spotted, Hamish. Well spotted.
I did an arty thing.
You did an art. Well, at the proofreading thing, because I used to proofread stuff for Katya and some of her friends when she was in university. Mm-hmm. And proofreading Russians is incredibly easy because the only mistake they make is direct articles. They will pretty much 100% of the time use the when it shouldn't be there and not use it when it should be there. It's amazing. It's an uncanny ability because they don't have direct articles in Russian. They don't have the and you know, like. So yeah, they're just guessing as to where we use them and where we don't.
The thing about The Expanse is that it ended on its most interesting bit that we've not even.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it. Sorry, I just spotted the googly eyes again, and it's making me laugh. Actually, can I say why I put the googly eyes on the camera? It's a camera with a big area with a small lens in the middle, so it kind of suited. I wish I could. I should get another.
You need another camera, another phone to take a picture of that phone so you can show us.
It's an actual camera, that one.
Go take a mirror selfie.
You've made your camera look like a person so you can feel like you're talking to a person.
Yeah, that was the idea. It's so that, because I find myself looking around at the pictures and I should be talking to the camera, you know.
Hello, camera.
I talk to you, like on the Jitsi.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'll talk to you. Yeah.
But sometimes you're on that screen. Because
on one screen it's the OBS, on the other screen it's the actual Jitsi, and I'll go like that. And I notice that all I'm doing is sort of showing this angle of myself, and I think, I should be looking at the one lower down. Then I end up doing that, and I think, no, I should be looking at the freaking camera.
I find it quite curious that you have two monitors, top and bottom.
Where... I've got some at the sides as well.
Oh, right, okay.
I have an array.
I've got two monitors, left and right.
No, side by side, I've tried in the past, but if it's not matching monitors, I can't cope with it. It needs to be...
Oh, really? I like one smaller, because that's my main monitor. This is for secondary stuff.
Yeah, I like an admin monitor. And then a sort of a video game, video, boom. I've got two the same.
Podcast, chat. All that stuff is over there. Main thing I'm focusing on is there. Yeah.
Yeah. Primary, secondary. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But hey, there we go. And funnily enough, we've got
the same. Yeah.
We've all got the same camera.
I've actually got more than one camera. I do sometimes use multiple cameras because when I'm doing the Tabletop Tuesday thing, I'll have multiple cameras set up.
This episode brought to you by the Logitech, whatever.
It's a pretty solid camera, but I wish there was a thing.
I don't think they make that one anymore. It's quite an old one.
I wish there was like a manual focus so that you could, like, I'm going to sit here.
Focus at this depth.
Oh, you mean physically manual focus.
Then
an automatic focus becomes like a DSLR where it's motorized and much more likely to break down and much more expensive to build.
I love that noise. When DSLRs focus, I love that noise. That noise is very cool.
I do it in OBS. Like I just set the focus and then leave it at that. With things like Jitsi and what have
I don't
you.
Know why webcam, you know the old point and clicky cameras, the not disposable, do you know what I mean? Compact cameras that used to get in the 80s, 70s, well, 60s onwards, I guess, but like the ones that you didn't have, you couldn't change the focus, they just focused at infinity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
why don't webcams just do that? There's probably a reason. Somebody who
I think knows it's more distance about... and the type of lens they use is
right.
Because these lenses are quite wide angled.
Okay.
Can't do it now because we're all sliced up into pieces. But when you look at it as a proper full 1080p picture, you'll see that you can actually see quite a wide area. But obviously we're in the little boxes here.
Yeah. Do you know one of the things I dislike about phone cameras is if you're taking a selfie or a picture of a person and their face isn't like in the central area.
Oh, try and focus on anything else.
It depends on how many focus points you've got and stuff. They're shite. I don't care how expensive or fancy your phone is. The camera's never going to be as good as a proper lens.
Around the fact that the lens is tiny, ultimately. I assume they're doing some kind of convolution to bring that out to square again. Yeah, but yeah, it's going to be the convolution.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where you can't really see it because of the light, but hang on.
Well, I've got a DSLR. It's a bit old now.
Mine's really old, but yeah.
It struggles in low light conditions. In high, you know... But
have you tried different lenses? Because you can use a short lens, and that will give you a much higher.
It will do, but I think now modern cameras are just better at low light conditions nowadays.
That's artificial compensation.
I don't think
it's a DSLR, you've still got the same. So you've got proper lenses and proper. You know, the f-stops and all everything in it about it is still the same as it was with an old camera 30 years, 40 years ago. I'll take that back slightly because some of them do have the compensations and things that phones have as well. Mm-hmm. But then they're trying to sell a DSLR to somebody that obviously doesn't need a DSLR in my opinion. Then, you know, they're trying to sell it to somebody.
Yeah, there was nothing wrong with the old point and click cameras.
Yeah, for most people. It's just the same argument. In all honesty, it's the same argument for these shitty things. The problem is that most people take a picture with this, see it on a tiny, tiny screen, and go, oh, that looks really good. You're not going to print them off or look at them on a bigger screen and say, oh, that looks really good. You're going to go, oh, fuck. I'm picky. I'm picky about typography. In pictures, I mean, from desktop publishing for years, because that was always the. I mean, I knew some publishers because down here in where I live now, there used to be a huge publishing place, Purnell's it's called. It's all shut down and gone now. But I knew someone, you know, when I came down here as like an 18-year-old, I knew like guys who were like retired from Purnell's that were like, you know, 60, 70, something, whatever. Mm. And you know, even with their old eyesight, they could like look at something digital, digital. they could just pick things out right away and see all the flaws. Yeah. And I think I'm a bit like that with, you know, all the convenience things. It's like MP3, you know, or any lossy compression. I feel it, even if I can't pinpoint what's wrong with it, I can still hear it. And it's the same with like digital, you know, poor quality digital camera stuff, which is. Almost every phone. You'll be people that go, oh, but the iPhone 70 million has got a super duper, and they've got Carl Zeiss lenses. And yeah, but it's still in a fucking thing that thin. You know, the only way they can do that is to make the lens more and more distorted.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, you know, and a zoom in as well. It's like you can't have a physical zoom in. On a phone. Yeah, I mean, some people do. That's some of the best results I've seen. When you think you get people that do like astronomy photography with their phone, and some of the best things they've got is like a 20p plastic adapter, and then a proper lens after it, and it works really well and stuff. You know, it's not the phone that's doing the work; it's the other lens that's doing the work. That's how light works. That's how cameras work, even digital ones. You know,
but I have done night shoots with both
old man screams at clouds.
Old man screams at clouds because I've done night shoots with both phones and cameras over the years, and the camera's admittedly older, but there is no settings that I can make look some of the dark stuff good on my DSLR where the phone picks it up like. Pretty crisp.
I'm not saying it's terrible, but I can see for specific use, for practical use, you're right. In a practical sense, But, you know, and especially when, no offence, but what you're doing is probably throwaway. It's probably for one publication and gone on to the next sort of thing, as if when you were doing journalism type stuff. So there is that as well. There's that, you know, it is more practical and sensible to do it that way. Sorry, Peanuts decided to wander and open all the doors and make a lot of noise.
Yeah, like, with journalism, like, a lot of it is just, like, I mean, first of all, the DPI in newspapers ain't really that high, so you can get away with that. We can get away with a lot. But and to be honest, light is more important than DPI and things like that. But also, it's like, it's more archivey, if that makes sense. You know, like, it's more like less artistic, more like just a picture. Usually, a picture of the mayor giving a giant sized check to someone.
It's just getting the picture that's the important part. Yeah.
The thing is, it's like. The light, I don't know the technical side of it, but the light that like iPhones pick up, because we were given iPhones, like they can take decent quality photos in ridiculously low light conditions, and I don't have this bad, like...
Yeah, I'm not saying that it doesn't work. What I'm saying, I'm not, you know, and I am accepting that this is an old man screaming at new young things. And yeah...
It's a lot of software trickery.
It's hard to describe why it's not as good without you know, without people going, well, that looks better to me. And it is. It's like, you know, oh, I can get, you know, all my tunes in this little memory card. You know, so if you think about early MP3 players, getting all your tunes in a little memory card was great. The quality then.
But also,
and a lot of the time now, people just listen to it on a fucking phone speaker and stuff. So, the, you know, it's the same as the idea of taking what you think is a great picture and looking at it on a tiny screen. It's going to look better. It's like video games. Like, I've got the Steam Deck, and some games they're obviously running at a lower resolution as well as, you know, being on a physically smaller screen, and they look really nice because they've got nice colors.
Things look great. Games look great on
a smaller screen, because it looks better. Yeah. And it's the same. I think it's a similar, if not exactly the same thing, with phones. Mm. If you take a picture or look at things on a phone, you know.
But I suppose, like you know, in, yeah. I mean, a lot of things look nicer on a phone with the screen that small. But I've never tried one of the lenses that you get on the back of phones. But they do. Yeah, I'd be curious. My phone camera is shite, so I it's not because I got my personal phone is just not.
Well, no, this phone is quite a bit better than my old one because it was my mum gave me this when she upgraded her phone. And it's, you know, certain things in it are shit because it was a model that had flaws. But the camera thing's actually not bad. But again, I will immediately spot the flaws as soon as I start looking at it properly. If I try to put the pictures into something that I would use, like one of those photo apps that I would use for my DSLR or something, pictures from that, I immediately start seeing artifacting and, poor.
Can you not take lossless pictures on that phone?
Well, probably. Hang on. This has got into something different, isn't it? Yeah, probably fill up the phone memory in a bit of bizarre.
Oh, yeah, I'll fill up the phone in no time. Yeah.
High efficiency pictures is off. Reduced file size is off. Auto HDR is on, though. That's the bright thing. That's one of the bright things. Shooting methods, watermark, fuck off.
Why do so many phones have a watermark? Like, I had one phone that actually had the watermark on as default. It's like, why do I want the brand of my fucking phone on my phone? what possible...
Doesn't say anything about it. I have file size reduction off, so I'm probably taking the best quality that I can with it. But I mean, and the amount of the thing is as well, and so this is my problem, not the phones or the young people or anything. Is people seem to be able to go, oh, there's something, and go, click, take a picture.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm going to unlock the phone, find the button.
And yeah, every time I accidentally touch my camera, the fucking
the
camera comes up.
It's like, how the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, yeah. And when you want the camera, it's like, where the fuck? Which fucking icon is the fucking? And I think there's a button you can, there's a swipe you can do.
Yeah, there's a shortcut you can use, and that's.
But I don't.
That's what the kids like.
Care enough to
kids
learn
like
it.
Chris are using those things to go. It's oh, like, I can take a picture quickly.
This is the big rift of the thing is that I don't the standard, like, I don't hate Android OS as a usability thing. I don't mind the touch screen.
I never specifically. Oh, right. No. See, we've had this discussion before.
Though. Easy to clean.
Fundamentally, is what we're realizing. Is Chris the Poochie of this show?
What's the catchphrase for Poochie? I can't remember.
I returned home to. Yeah, I can't remember.
I'm Poochie, the big red dog.
No, there's something.
Poochie had to return to his home planet.
Yeah.
He died on the way, or something like that. Stylus touchscreens, Palm OS, Scion.
Oh, they were beautiful machines.
Great.
Yeah.
A capacitive touchscreen where you're covering. I know. I said, when you're covering what you're trying to fucking interact with. The worst invention in human history, apart from maybe the nuclear warhead.
What about maybe. Nuclear warhead, where it uses an app to detonate?
Touchscreen.
Oh no!
You see that in fucking films, don't you? You see that they've got these touchscreen missile controllers, and it's like.
But that's because you can just stick an iPad to it as a prop, right?
That's exactly why they do it. But you know, also be but really, you're thinking, oh, it's like on the Ross and Auntie. You see like the things that they. It's like. You could just accidentally click the wrong thing there.
Alex has one of those. What's the word? Ergonomic mice things with a. It's just a lot of the stuff in the Ross and Auntie is just off the shelf. Like they've not, like they've just bought.
I've spotted some audio control equipment and stuff in there as well. That's what they used to do in Star Trek. They had part of an light or audio feeder system. You do, of course. When you've got a mixer, do the Star Trek thing. You've got to do it. It's in the rules. Especially when you've got motorized faders and you just do it with one or two and move all the rest and everything.
So, to go originally back to my point...
What?
Not necessarily my point, my observation... what the hell just blew up on Illus?
Yeah, so this is the bit of the show. Hello, Peanut.
Hello, Peanut.
This is the bit of the show you actually care about, isn't it? The protomolecule stuff. And it's finally, after two episodes of none of that, pretty much, it's finally something big happens. There's a big cliffhanger for you, I imagine.
Yeah, well, what they said was that the lightning had gone all around the planet. And it had concentrated at the end on those islands and heated them up for some reason. And then eventually one of them he describes it as starting to look like a super volcano on a planet with no volcanic activity. And essentially it's the equivalent of a super volcano going off, or, you know. So it's like a super mega nuclear explosion on one of the islands for some reason.
Yeah.
Don't want to be harping on this. Or given too many clues, but that is the next one you're going to watch anyway. But to me, this is what I'm sure Drew's conflating some stuff from the next episode in his brain. When you were talking earlier about some stuff, I feel like...
Oh, no, I can't remember what happens in this season, so that's right, not...
Okay. I really feel like some of the arguments you made for certain things
make more sense next episode than they did this episode. Holden is trustworthy, and this is what he's saying. That's all I'm basing that on. Okay. I cannot remember what happens in this season. I zone out when I'm watching this season and pay attention again for the next season, usually.
Are we wanting to finish, or should I take Peanut out and come back?
I think we're pretty wrapped up.
We're done, aren't we? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Have we got any notes that we didn't...
Oh, yeah, check, see if you get any... Standing,
my final note is boom.
Boom.
Yeah.
It is a big boom.
It's a boom.
And you know the orbital ships are watching this thing. Well, Alex wasn't paying attention. It just sort of suddenly got really, really hot, and he went, "What the hell's that?"
And I will announce an intention. It is the intention of me and Ghosty that we play some Worms WMD together because we need more games.
How does that fit in with a video that might not be watched in 2 years' time?
I also want to advertise the Discord. Come to the if you like people and playing games with us and talking with us in voices like what we're using now.
Yeah, if you like the talking part, don't necessarily rely on the Discord. But
if you've got a very simple audio setup
it's
and you like
fuck all do we audio, it's some sort of network thing. My audio
it does seem to be, yeah.
There's no connection between the audio because I've tried it. I've tried putting things through. Yeah.
Although I bet if you unplugged all of your audio stuff and plugged one of these in, I bet it would work.
I mean, I've got things. I'm not going to give.
not even going to countenance that.
It's a countenance. That's the one I was looking for. Thank you.
There's a lovely. I don't know if you got to it yet, but there's a bit in Arrested Development where. Have you got to the bit where the mum and Lindsay go to like a working class people's restaurant? I think it's called Klimpy's or something like that.
I can't remember.
It's not a spoiler. It's just a fun line to look out for. Because what's the mum's name?
Lucille.
The waitress comes up. Hi, how may I help you? Like, I'll be your server. And she orders a meal. And she says, and the server says, platter or plate. And Lucille goes, I do not understand the question, and I won't answer it. I love that line.
I think that might be in the later ones, because I've watched the original run now, so the first three series, and then I'm now just starting.
I thought it was before that.
It doesn't ring a bell. Then I've been kind of like, I've not been totally focused, but I've been just going the gist of it.
You might spot it on the rewatch.
Chris, do you want to say anything weird?
I like the bit where the lady says to Amos, "You're fucking weird, aren't you?" or something like that.
Yes, yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah, their relationship is hot. Mm. That's the kind of when I've had
it's
sexual
so
relationships.
Cold, it's hot.
Those are the kind of romantic
and also,
relationships
I really quite
I like.
Jess Salguero, so,
just yeah. very direct, and I like it. No game playing. No, not just like. We enjoy each other's company. Let's hang out and fuck sometimes.